The Border Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services, locally owned and operated, and HLAC certified, meeting the highest industry standards. Walker has partnerships with hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in and around the metro area. Walker Medical Linen Services in Kansas City and online at walkermls.com.
Welcome back to the show. Let's talk to our baseball insider, Buster Olney. Buster, one of the big headlines today, the ESPN Top 100 MLB players, Bobby Witt Jr. ranks number 69. Your thoughts? We're thrilled, Buster. I don't know.
Oh, wow.
Good morning to you.
Good morning to you, too. Like, you know, I do feel like the hockey goalie, okay? Yeah. As we start out, I'm like, okay, I'm ready for a shot from that angle. I'm ready for a question from this angle. I'm ready to go here. And that one just went right past me, right off the bat.
Hey, I'm just glad he made it. But then, it made even better. He's number 69, and so they know what they're doing at ESPN. I can promise you that. But there is one question we'll get into, obviously. The Ohtani and Trout and WBC and everything else. There was something interesting, which was going to lead me to a question I was going to ask later, but I'll start now with Bobby Witt Jr. When they wrote about the season prediction, it says the Royals knew Witt wouldn't play much in the WBC, but they wanted him to experience that environment. They thought it could speed up his development and turn him into a better player. And it says here, it'll work. Witt will take a big leap in 2023 and vie for the All-Star team. And I think that's interesting because we had this discussion that maybe the Royals weren't too happy that Bobby Witt Jr. only had a couple of plate appearances. And even more importantly, Brady Singer only had two innings in the WBC. But this is something that I do find interesting, that the Royals maybe aren't as concerned about how many plate appearances Bobby Witt Jr. had. They wanted him in that environment, and they think that alone could speed up his development and turn him into a better player. I know it's a different story with a starting pitcher because you're talking about building him up and getting him ready for the regular season. But what about that idea that the Royals just wanted him to be in that environment and hope that they can help him become a better player quicker?
100%. I think for position players, it is a different proposition than it is for pitchers. You know, I tweeted out this morning that about the pitching issue, which is going to continue, where teams they go along with a player saying, "I want to play in the WBC," and then the pitcher doesn't have enough innings. That's a problem, and I actually think there's a pretty easy way around it. Just by essentially allowing guys stay in their respective camps, and then on the day that they're scheduled to pitch, fly out. I mean, that happens all year with minor league affiliates. Guys go up and down. So it would have been better, in my opinion, if Brady had stayed with the Royals, stayed on count, did his innings count, did the exhibitions. And I hope that they make an adjustment like that for the next WBC. But for position players, for Bobby Witt Jr., I think there's enormous value with him being around a Mike Trout and, being around on a daily basis a Tim Anderson, guys who have been around, and it raises his standard, or the standard that he experienced in the big leagues. I mean, let's face it, last year was not only a disappointing year, but so much of the conversation middle of the year was about the vaccines and whether or not the Royals handle it great. And I don't think the players did handle it great. And here's Bobby, playing his rookie season and having all that as opposed to, hey, this is what it takes to be one of the best players in the big leagues. I absolutely think that experience will help him going forward. And maybe he'll carry some of that to his young teammates on the Royals. And, hey, I had this conversation when I was in the on-deck circle with Trout. We were taking batting practice, and this is what I heard from from Nolan Arenado, from Paul Goldschmidt, who are great pros. I absolutely believe that to be the case for Bobby.
Gosh, that's a great point, Buster. I hadn't even really thought about it, but I mean, for Bobby Witt Jr., the biggest voice and leader in the clubhouse for him last year was a guy who openly said, I'm not going to take the vaccine, but if we were competitive, I might. And then got traded and got vaccinated so he could play. I mean, that was the leadership voice that was in the clubhouse his rookie season. So to be around these guys, man, that's a great point. And on the flip side, the Brady Singer thing is more of an issue. I just saw that Andy Rogers had pointed out, I think he's going to throw, what is it, Stephen, 3 1/3, something like that. They're expecting him to throw this week, which maybe means by the time the season starts, he's up to 4 or 5 innings. And that's not ideal, but at the same time, what are we talking about, 1 or 2 starts before he gets fully stretched out? Is that the biggest cost here? If that's the case, I guess I'm not, in a season as long as Major League Baseball's, I'm not as upset about that. Should I be?
I think you could be a little bit upset about it. I mean, I don't haven't specifically asked JJ about, you know, what the inning count and you know, are they going to pull him back? Would they rather have him go slowly into the season and build innings the year it goes along? I don't know the specifics of that, but I do feel like, and man, I'm having, you know, off the record conversations with managers and pitching coaches of teams around the baseball. They're livid. Like, they can't stand how some of these guys are being handled, you know, getting the phone call or getting a text message, hey, can we pitch this guy on back-to-back days? We're short on pitching. What's that about? It doesn't need to be that way, especially if the WBC gains credibility. You know, my suggestion is, especially you go to the last round, just open it up and just say, look, if Max Scherzer or Justin Verlander are scheduled to, you know, start on a given day, give them the option of taking the ball in the WBC and then fly guys in, or to have guys make the 45-minute bus trip down to Miami. How is that any different than what happens during the regular season when guys, you know, get on planes and they go from AAA to the big leagues? They come in the day before and then they start. And that way, you know, you leave a Brady Singer in the Royals camp until the WBC, being a manager, in this case, Mark DeRosa, says, hey, on Wednesday, we see a 3-inning slot for you. We'd love for you to make that flight and come out here. I'd rather do that and let the pitchers stay under the umbrella of their parent team, of their parent major league team, than having these guys go into camps and not pitch and be behind. It seems that, you know, there's an easy solution to what is a big problem in the WBC.
Buster Olney is our guest. All right, Buster, let's wrap up the WBC. Everyone has been talking about that final at bat, Trout against Shohei Ohtani. And it was, you know, I just said, you know, watching that, it just felt like you were watching something important, something that was meaningful, that maybe we won't quite know exactly how meaningful it was for a while, because you know, some people suggested, hey, this will be looked upon as the WBC that changed everything, where it really took off and people really started to care. And then after this, it'll be viewed differently. And then you have arguably the two best players in the world facing each other, and you would never get that because they're teammates. And it was awesome. And then Ohtani just blew Mike Trout away, which was just another display of his greatness and dominance. What did that final at bat mean to you?
Well, it was a dream scenario for Major League Baseball, and I did a couple shows on for ESPN yesterday, and I talked about this. You know, the dream team in 1992 that was so important for the NBA was inspired by, I think, the imaginations of fans saying, "Boy, what will it look like? Michael Jordan playing with Larry Bird, playing alongside Magic Johnson, playing alongside Charles Barkley. You know, what would that look like? What would that feel like?" And as this tournament began, I think the question was, boy, wouldn't that be cool if we saw Ohtani against Trout, you know, teammates, friends, in the WBC. And not only did it happen, but it happened in the final, in the last plate appearance of the entire tournament. That's crazy, and that is a dream scenario for, you know, for Major League Baseball, for the Player Association. They co-own this event, and that, you know, the game the other night was the most watched baseball game in the history of the sport. And so then last night you had Connor McDavid, you know, one of the best hockey players the world's seen. Yeah, that's what we want. When's the last time Major League Baseball was a model for other sports in how, you know, scenarios should play out? It was amazing. And in terms of that particular at bat, I would love to be a fly on the wall for the conversation that Ohtani and Trout have the next time they speak, because my guess is that they'll be part of Mike Trout, who's so competitive, saying to Ohtani, who's also competitive, and they had nods between them during the course of that plate appearance, where Trout would say, really, you're throwing 102 and you spin a slider on a 3-2 pitch rather than challenge me? And they'll both laugh and they'll have a lot of fun with it. It was awesome. The first, the best player in the world facing the second best player in the world with the whole tournament on the line. It was so cool, and it'll stick with people for a lot of years.
I'd like to think they'll handle it much the same way that Apollo Creed and Rocky Balboa handled their situation at the end of Rocky III, when the fields are clear, no one's out there, and ding ding, and it's just those two, and Trout challenges Shohei Ohtani one more time, and we never find out what actually happened. But Trout just does it to satisfy his competitive streak, his competitive nature. All right, so,
or Steven, we'll wait till next year when Ohtani's on the Dodgers and Trout's on the Angels, and they're facing off in the freeway series in May.
Oh, Buster.
I like to picture the two of them running on the beach against one another as well, you know?
Well,
we know who probably would win that at this point. I think even Trout would concede that.
Right, that's exactly right. Okay, so let's move on and talk about, did you have any other WBC thoughts, Nate?
Yeah, I guess just my last question on it is, you mentioned, you know, you got stars in the game of hockey saying we want something like that. Players that are stars embracing it and saying they want to be a part of it again. Everybody who witnessed it seemed to love this event. And you mentioned that it's the most watched baseball game maybe in the history of the world. Where does it go from here? I mean, do you dare to dream of what it could be now, and what do you think that dream looks like?
Yeah, and I think they have an opportunity to build. And I do think they can tweak the pitching issue just with a solution along the lines that I mentioned. Look, everyone's, you know, has an idea about when they should play it. You know, on social media today, I saw some people are saying, well, play it in January. You can't play it in January. You can't play it mid-February. The pitchers in particular are not ramped up physically to play. You can't play it in November because you have a lot of players at the end of the regular season when their teams are eliminated. They shut it down, and then they go back and they begin their off-season rest. So they're not available. And some of the best players in the world, you know, teams that reach the World Series, the playoffs, you know, they're gassed by the time they get to November. So you can't play it then. I personally think that what they should do is have a midsummer event for the WBC where you play the semis and the finals at the All-Star break. So imagine this. On Monday, you have the Home Run Derby, which is, you know, one of the highest rated events that baseball had. My employer is the broadcaster of that. So, of course, I'm going to advocate for Monday of the All-Star Week, have the Home Run Derby. On Tuesday, play the semifinals of the WBC on the same day, you know, a day-nighter. On Wednesday, have the All-Star Game, which, let's face it, doesn't have as much juice as it used to in terms of being a competitive event, but people still tune in to watch. It's one of the, you know, the highest-rated baseball events of the year. And on a Thursday of All-Star Week, then you play the finals of the WBC, and you launch into the second half and start that on Saturday, or maybe start it on Friday. But I do think there's an opportunity in the middle of the summer when there's not really a lot else going on, all the other sports are basically dormant, you could have even more eyeballs on the semis and the finals of the WBC.
All right, Buster, we are, with everything that's been going on, even more so than other years, opening day has absolutely snuck up on me. I can't believe we're a week away, but here we are. Give me your feelings about the Royals. They have a new regime. They have a very talented group of offensive players, and then a lot of question marks on the pitching staff. But a new pitching coach, new manager, J.J. Piccolo, it's his show now. What are you expecting from the Royals?
better than last year, which is, I mean, let's be honest, it's a low bar because last year was such a disappointment. Everything that I've heard from people who've gone through the camp, and I have not been to Royals camp this spring, is that the energy is different, which is not surprising, right? You turn over a staff, you have a new regime, you have a renewed energy, and there's an opportunity there to build. And so I'm curious to see what that looks like. And as always, if you're a member of the American League Central, there's an opportunity there that if you're in the American League East is not there, where you can take a potentially a big jump forward. The Guardians won the division easily last year, and yet they're a very young team with a thin margin for error because they don't spend a lot of money. You know, one or two key injuries, and that could pull them back down. I was in Twins camp this spring. With Carlos Correa now committed there going forward, you know, there's a renewed energy there, but there's a lot of injury issues on that team. Chicago White Sox coming off a disappointing year. There's some depth questions there. So I do think for the Royals, you're going to see them take a step forward this year. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, the impact of, you know, having Bobby Witt Jr. come back, you know, from that tournament and going into that camp and what'll manifest there. And I think it's great that Zach Greinke's on the staff. Yeah, he's not close to being the same pitcher he was earlier in his career, but it's clear from everything everybody says about him is that he brings an equilibrium with his presence, with his, you know, unusual humor and personality. And I think he'll be a plus. And so I do think it's going to be a year at the end, and I don't think the Royals are going to make the playoffs, but I do think that at the end of this year, there'll be a lot of conversation about Kansas City taking a big step forward to trying to get back to competitive relevance.
Buster Olney is our guest. You know, I referenced, and you tweeted it out, that ESPN's top 100 baseball players and Bobby Witt Jr., people may have thought I was joking. He is ranked number 69. But the other question I wanted to ask you was, because this, I started getting into a debate with some of my baseball nut friends, you know, when people were describing that final at bat in the WBC, you know, it's a battle between the two best players in Major League Baseball. And I don't think anyone's going to dispute that Ohtani is one of them. But if it's not Ohtani, is Mike Trout still the best position player that's not Ohtani in Major League Baseball, in your opinion?
I believe he is when he's on the field. And if he's not, it's Aaron Judge. For me, I mean, what Aaron Judge did last year was incredible. I actually think he's going to back it up with another phenomenal season this year. He looks great. As Aaron Boone, the Yankees manager, has told me, Judge has really learned as his career has gone along how to avoid the sort of injuries that plagued him in 2018, 2019 by reducing his preparation, not feeling like every day he's got to take a million swings. Understanding and trusting his talent on a daily basis. And now that his contract situation is settled and he knows he's going to play the rest of his career with the Yankees, he's absolutely going to take off. You know, one of the names that jumped up in the poll this year, it surprised me how far it went, was Julio Rodriguez, the Mariners, who mm-hmm. I do think within 5 years will be one of the top three, four players in Major League Baseball. But I don't think he's as close as some of my peers at ESPN do. Like, I think he's still got some room for growth there. That said, he's on the cover of Sports Illustrated this week, and he is so much fun to watch.
Okay, and so then the comment you made at the beginning, you talked about Ohtani being on the Dodgers roster the next time he faces Mike Trout. So, what are we – I've seen numbers thrown out there. Like, what are we talking about here as far as a contract? I mean, like something that a team that's actually going to pay. And if the Angels aren't going to be able to match that or even come close to re-signing him, will they actually trade him before the trade deadline? Because I would love to see what that looks like as well. What's going to happen with Ohtani?
So last year, the recommendation from within the Angels organization, the front office owner, Artie Moreno, was to trade Ohtani because they knew that if you're going to get equal value for a player who is unequaled in value in the history of baseball, in certain Babe Ruth wasn't close to giving the two-way production that you see from Ohtani And we're not even talking about marketability in this day and age. I mean, Babe Ruth changed the sport with his marketability back in the 1920s. That's what Ohtani's doing for the sport now. So the front office is like, we need to trade him. And Artie Moreno said no. He's on the record this spring in an interview with Sports Illustrated saying, if we are competing, contending, we're not trading him. I don't think they're going to trade him. And, yes, he's going to go into free agency. And the big question at that point is, will the contract number start with a 5 or will it start with a 6, as in $500 million-plus or $600 million-plus? I think it's going to be $600 million-plus. When you watch him compete this spring, he does look like the 12-year-old who hit puberty 4 years before any of his peers. And he's playing Major League Baseball. In the WBC, he had the fastest pitch, 102 miles per hour, in the entire tournament. He hit the hardest ball of anyone in the tournament, 118 miles per hour. He's a top 10 hitter. He's a top 10 pitcher. It's the ultimate insurance policy of your team bidding on him. Because if he got hurt as a pitcher, guess what? You've got a top 10 hitter. And on top of that is the marketability we're talking about. I think the Mets are absolutely loading up on him. Their general manager, Billy Epler, was with the Angels when they lured Ohtani to the Angels. So I think the Mets are going to be in big. I think the Dodgers are going to be in big. I think other teams potentially could be in big. And on the other hand, the Angels owner has never gone over the luxury tax threshold in his entire time running the team. And he's already got huge obligations to Mike Trout, to Anthony Rendon. So, no, I think Ohtani's going to move on. And if I'm sitting here today and guessing, I think the odds are very high he's going to wind up with the Mets or the Dodgers. Maybe the Yankees get involved.
Okay, so you mentioned those usual suspects. And here's the big problem when it comes to Major League Baseball versus the NFL. Like, the best player in all the NFL is Patrick Mahomes. And if the Royals had, like, if Bobby Witt Jr. turns out to be the best player in 2 or 3 years, then it will be a countdown until he leaves Kansas City because the Royals won't be able to afford him. The Chiefs can keep Patrick Mahomes forever and ever, and that's why it's awesome. But for Ohtani, if it's like $600 million, like, how many teams can actually, even if you consider the tremendous return and everything he'll do for the franchise, how many teams can actually pay that price tag in Major League Baseball?
And to put the number into context, if he gets a contract of $600 million or more, that would mean that he'd have an annual salary of about $60 million. You'd assume they'd spread it out over 10 or 11-year contract. $60 million would be larger than the total payroll of the Baltimore Orioles and, like, three other teams. And you're right.
So he's not going to Baltimore then, all right? Okay, we got that.
I think there's a good chance. Let's break some news here. He's not going to sign with Baltimore. Right, he's probably not going to sign with Tampa Bay. Mm-hmm. He's probably not going to sign with Kansas City.
Thanks,
and
Buster.
And you're right. I'm sorry.
I said thanks a lot, Buster.
I know. And you're right. It's an issue, but the fact is that that horse left the barn a long time ago when they set up baseball's financial structure. It is going to be a fight, I think, in the next CBA between the small market, big market teams over what the financial structure needs to be. And some teams are working around it by aggressively looking to sign their best young superstar prospects to massive deals early in their tenure in the big leagues. We've seen the Braves have done it with so many guys, Austin Riley, Ronald Acuna Jr., Ozzie Albies, Michael Harris II, on down the line. And let's face it, if you're the Royals, it's crucial to go to a Bobby Witt Jr., and not in the second or third year of their careers, but as they start and say, look, we're betting on you in the long run. I think that's what small market teams need to do. Jose Ramirez last year agreed to a deal with the Guardians. He was the outlier because he probably sold himself short by about $80 or $100 million. Because he liked the stability of Cleveland. He liked $120 million guaranteed in his pocket. I think if you're the Royals, if you have an Uber prospect, you have to absolutely do everything you can to lock that guy up for an 8-10-year contract early in their careers as they start.
Nate Buchady.
To me, the answer that we started the segment off with the answer to so many of these problems, and you talk about the economic model. It absolutely needs to be disrupted in baseball. And the the bottom line is they actually have the ability to turn this into a global sport that makes more money for all the owners. And if they would centralize their broadcasting so that every team's making the same amount of money on the same deal that is sold to whoever wants to stream the games globally, they grow the pie for everybody. Everybody makes more money. They share the revenue equally. And now every team gets to feel like they're really playing the same sport because they're not all playing the same sport. This is like watching mid-majors play against Power 5 conference teams. They're both in Division 1, but they're not playing the same sport. And baseball, it's so frustrating to see, first of all, the glimpse this week of what the sport can be, while the people that are running it, or some of them anyway, are kicking and screaming about it and trying to fight against allowing it to be that. That's my frustration.
Do you? I'll just piggyback on what you said before we let you go. Just your opinion. Do you think the Royals already missed their window to try to do that with Bobby Witt Jr.?
I think they're getting close. I think it's absolutely. I mean, yeah, you could always. And I haven't talked to Bobby about this, so it's not really fair to me to say, you know, to speak for him. But generally speaking, if you're going to sign, a top, 20 talent like that, you got to be super aggressive, and it's got to be early now. The way these things are playing out, and just to Nate, I hear you, and you might as well ask for world peace right after that.
He does because, sometimes.
Yeah. Well, the fact is that, I've always thought of Major League Baseball as being a confederacy more than, centrally run. The NFL became centrally run when New York Giants owner Wellington Mara essentially said, you know what, to grow the whole sport, and this was like 60 years ago, we're going to concede the rights to central baseball. That doesn't happen in Major League or central football. That doesn't happen in baseball. The New York Yankees are not going to go in and say, you know what? We make a ton of money with our YES Network, and we're going to, step back and we're going to let Major League Baseball negotiate for all of us. They're not going to give up their competitive advantage. The Dodgers are not going to give up their competitive advantages. So, I mean, the scenario that you laid out, while I agree with you, could grow the whole sport, it's never going to happen.
By the way, just to back that up about the Bobby Witt, I think the Royals fear it's already too late. Based on conversations,
because what I just said, did I cause that? I'm sorry.
No. I think that you look at where Bobby Witt Jr. comes from. He's the kind of player that's much more willing to ride this thing out and bet on himself than to sign away player control early in his career. So I think they feel like they're worried that it's probably already too late.
All right, give that money to Vinny Pasquantino then, all right? Let's make something happen. Buster, we'll talk to you next week, and I will look forward to your official locks, your official Major League Baseball season predictions, sir.
I will bring them. I'll be bringing them across the board.
Wow. We can't wait. We'll see if we can... We matched up pretty well last year. We'll see if we can do the same thing next week. Buster, thank you so much for the time.
Thanks, guys.
That's Buster Olney. Give the money to Vinny.
Okay. I like that.
Yeah.
I like Vinny.
Yeah. The Pasquatch. Let's go.
Is that the name they're going with now?
I like them all. I like Vinny. My cousin Vinny. We'll take a break. Back after this on WHB.
Oh, Billy.
This is a banger, by the way. You drive to work? Boom, 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 boom. Roll down your windows and crank it up. People at the stoplight are like, what? This dude loves indoor soccer. or Turkish prisons, or both. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But when we play this song, that means we're giving away something to our listeners. We value you. We care for you. You want to give something away, Marco? You got time or not? I got a 4-pack of tickets, courtesy of our friend to Tickets for Less. Giving away a 4-pack. We gave a couple yesterday away. Now we're giving away one more. A 4-pack of tickets to the Sunday's Comets game versus the Harrisburg Heat.
Oh, yeah.
At Cable Dahmer Arena. The game starts at 4:05. Caller number
16?
Yeah.
Because today is the Sweet 16.
All right, caller number 16. Sweet 16. Caller number 16 at 913-3810-810. 913-3810-810. Caller number 16 gets a 4-pack of tickets, courtesy of our friends at Tickets for Less, to this Sunday's Comets game versus the Harrisburg Heat at Cable Dahmer Arena. Game time, 4:05. Get it. There. That's our good deed for today. Now can we listen to some comments to help us preview the Sweet 16? Marco, I'd love it. How about Tom Izzo, the head coach of Michigan State? That's who K-State has to play tonight at Madison Square Garden for the right to go to the Elite Eight. Here, Tom Izzo, Hall of Fame basketball coach, tells us he's a big fan of Jerome Tang.
Well, he's used the transfer portal well, and it's worked pretty well for him. And I think the other thing, though, is you look at him, and this is taking nothing away from him, but he is an experienced, non-experienced head coach. I spent 12 or 13 years with Judd Heathcote, and that really helped prepare me. I remember Judd saying one time, would you rather take a smaller job and just so you can say you're the head coach, or would you rather prepare for Indiana and Michigan and Purdue every day, you know? And I think that helped me. I think Scott Drew really helped Jerome, you know. They built that program. They built it together, just like I built mine with my assistants over the years. If you watch them, I think he was given a lot of power, just like I was at the end. You know, I think Scott had a lot of faith in Jerome, and so he had more than just suggestive power that sometimes assistants have. So I think he was, you know, Roy Williams was born to take over a bigger job. You know, some people leave early and work their way up through the ranks. I think Bill Self did. Some people stay like I did or Jerome did and prepare yourself that way. I think he deserves a lot of credit. I think Scott Drew deserves a lot of credit. And I think it shows that we need our assistants, you know. Assistants are more valuable than sometimes any of us give them. And I think he did a lot for that Baylor program, and that's why they had the success they had. And Scott allowed him to and helped prepare him to be a head coach. And so I'm sure he's very grateful of that, too.
I get what Tom Izzo is saying, but why was he saying it while flying a World War II era fighter plane?
I don't know.
Understand that. Why didn't he land that plane so he could have his press conference?
That's a good question.
Maybe he was running late to the press conference because he was too... had to take it from the sky.
Do I think he's a great... Here's another good example that I made earlier this week, or last week. Arizona head coach Tommy Lloyd. He was an assistant at Gonzaga from 2001 until 2021.
That's almost 20 years.
Yeah, it's 20 years exactly.
Oh.
Now, how many offers do you think he had in that time span?
A couple
here and there?
Yeah.
And then he holds out and finally takes a job at Arizona. And he's been at Arizona for 2 years. But then you got, you know, Dennis Gates, who was a longtime assistant under Leonard Hamilton at Florida State, but then took the job at Cleveland State before bouncing to Mizzou. So, more than one way to do it, but you know, Tommy Lloyd's the closest comparison to Jerome Tang.
Yeah,
being a longtime assistant at one spot, and that's it. All right, so that was...
Roy was kind of like that, as you heard Izzo say there.
Yeah.
I don't remember how long he was at North Carolina, though. I think he still was relatively
47
young.
47 years.
47 years at North Carolina.
I'll look it up. Guess. Let's see if you know your former coach you love so much.
Oh, I don't... You know,
you loved I said. You loved him?
Well,
don't... When he was...
Dude, I got...
You kiss his feet when he was the head coach of
remember
Kansas.
Remember the gal from Wichita that broke my heart? We talked
10
about,
years.
Man, look at me. Nailed it.
Yeah, the woman, the Wichita woman that broke your heart.
Yeah, she chewed me out one time because we were hanging out with some friends of hers. They had all gone to KU together, and one of them, you know, was like, "So you get to spend some time around Roy Williams?"
Yeah.
And I said, "Yeah." She said, "Is he just the greatest guy?"
Yeah.
And I said, "Eh."
Wow. And she chewed you out?
She said, "You know, why don't you just let people believe in their heroes and believe that the person's as great as they want to think they are?
I don't agree with that.
Why do you have to ruin it for them? You know, she's never going to meet Roy Williams or anything like that." And I was like, "Yeah, just being honest.
Tell people what the real deal is."
I don't think Roy Williams is a terrible guy or anything. In my experience,
it sounds like you don't like him very much.
I was not a huge fan.
Well, there you go.
I
sat in Jason Whitlock's living room with Roy Williams one time.
Did he say "aw shucks" to you?
No,
tell you about how
he
used to buy Coca-Cola for a nickel?
"Hello, I'm Roy Williams." Yeah. And I'm like, "Yes." "Yes, you are." I'm like, you know.
Was he nice to you?
Why not? You're sure.
Good.
We ate eggs that Whitlock's mother made and
there you go.
Talked.
That's nice.
What were you going to say?
Nothing.
No. No, you can't do that. No. Hey, if there's one thing that you have on this show that you don't have other places, balls.
Oh, I think I've been pretty much castrated on this show as well.
No, you have not.
I don't have any balls.
Oh, what were you going to say? Please.
I got no balls.
What were you going to say? People want to hear you say this about Roy Williams.
Well, I was...
Old balls.
It was just a joke. It was a joke that came to my mind.
Well, say it. It'd be funny. I like to laugh.
A little one-liner, but it's
not. Go ahead. Go now.
Well, you know, I wasn't as big of a fan of Roy as Roy was of Roy.
What's wrong with that? See, you could switch it around and make it like a Don Rickles deal. You know, like I was watching, I like to watch Don Rickles, because I have to MC this roast of Steve DeBerg, and Don Rickles is my inspiration. And, he said, "Hey, there's Robert De Niro, best actor in the world. Go ahead, ask him; he'll tell you." You can do that. See something like
I'm not as good as Don Rickles. That's what.
Well, who is?
Know.
To be honest,
nobody.
With you. Here's more from Tom Izzo talking about his man Tyson Walker, saying he isn't your typical New York City point guard.
Well, you know, he's not from the heart of the city, but he is. He does have that. That swagger about him, you know, his is a little more, I think sometimes the New York swagger is a very cocky swagger, and sometimes that's good. You got to be, he's kind of had the happy medium, you know, he's got enough cockiness to be confident, and yet he's an unbelievable kid, you know, and at his size, I mean, he wants to guard you, but he also wants to take big shots. I mean, he's the best two-way player I've had. Probably since Gary, you know, where he can do it on both ends. And that's so valuable to a team and so good to be able to tell other scorers that he can get you 30 at some nights and he can shut down the other player.
All right, now let's hear from Tyson Walker. He was asked if he faced Marquise Noel when they played in the Catholic League together.
Yeah, we played a couple times, sophomore and junior year. Catholic League is good. A lot of talented people. There's a lot of big names playing in that game. Some in the pros. So it's a good league. Still is a good league. That's really
What is it like to now see a guy you played with against high school and now to be facing him on this stage?
He's not the first one, but it's definitely cool because we played each other a lot of times. But just play on this stage is even better.
Now let's hear Jerome Tang when he was asked about what Tom Izzo said about him.
Tom Izzo, man, is just a class act, and I've followed him for a long time. And the fact that as an assistant he knew my name, it like blew me away, you know. And just to watch what he's done and how he's handled his program and loved his players and had like tremendous success on and off the court, you know. How he handled the tragedy at Michigan State this year. I mean, everybody can learn from that. And I was blessed to work with Scott, and he did a great job of helping prepare me for this. And he never treated me as an assistant, always told me to act like a head coach and treat the program like it was mine. So I do believe that when you're with guys like Judd Heathcote and Scott Drew, that you those Hall of Fame kind of guys, they help prepare you. You learn so much from them so that you are ready for this. And I'm just thankful. I told Coach Izzo, I wish it was me and him playing to see who goes to Elite Eight, right? It's going to be our teams, and so we're not going to do anything. It's about those guys out there on the floor. And I wouldn't want to shoot free throws against him, though, because I know he's really good at that.
I feel like Jerome Tang would beat Tom Izzo one-on-one. But like Jerome Tang said, free throws could be the difference. finally, Marquise Noel was asked about facing the Michigan State guards.
I determine how the game is going to go. I mean, I'm not really focused on, you know, what they did in the past versus other good point guards. I played in the toughest league in the country, which is the Big 12. You have all types of Hall of Fame coaches that, you know, scouted me and, you know, try to stop me. So I don't think that's going to be an issue. I feel like this game is going to be Kansas State Wildcats versus Michigan State, and I'm going to do whatever it takes to win a basketball game.
All right. Kansas State, Michigan State, 5:30 tip-off. Why don't you listen to it tonight right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's check in with Gary Lezek. Hello, Gary.
March Madness continues tonight. How are you guys?
How much money you got on K-State?
None. I just want them to win, you know. Fun to just watch them win. So I just want the Big 12 to win, yeah. You know. Go retweet my tweet, Stephen.
Which one?
I want you guys to retweet it. The one that says the LRC helps Weather 2020 predict this week's severe weather risks.
Didn't I already retweet it like half an hour ago?
Yep, you maybe. Did.
Yeah.
Okay,
don't need you to tell me to retweet your. I retweeted it on my own.
Well, I need everyone out there listening to retweet it.
Oh.
Yeah, that's different than you.
I just retweeted it.
Tell Nate. Nate's the one that he needs instruction.
I'm slow. I need to get with the program.
Retweet it. So. What's going on is that yesterday, I don't know if you saw the tornado in Los Angeles. Did you see that?
No.
There was a tornado in Los Angeles, huh?
I saw it, Gary, yes.
A significant one, okay? It was like, it looked like it was Kansas, all right? It was like debris is in the air, the funnels spinning around, multi-vortex, and probably just an EF1. But tornado hits L.A., 50-day cycle this year. What happened 50 days ago? No, they didn't have a tornado, but they had a major storm. The weather pattern is cycling regularly, and so there's a big severe weather risk tomorrow over the southeast near Mississippi. What happened 101 days before that? A significant tornado outbreak happened in December, And so the pattern is cycling, and we're trying to get the word out. As you probably, you guys read the Daily Beast article. Did you read it?
Yep.
Nate,
did you read it?
No.
There it is. There it is.
I understand. I'll call you later, and I'll read it to you.
Right. Maybe you can tell me about it over some of those martinis you owe me.
All right, let's go do it.
All right.
Yeah,
I'm game.
I'm available.
You're available. Let's go.
Yeah. So, but I'm working on this. So go retweet that. We're getting this technology out to the world. The forecast made 65 days ago for tomorrow's severe weather outbreak is as accurate as the day one or day two outlook from the Storm Prediction Center. My peers in that article, Daily Beast, say it can't be done more than 14 days in advance. Well, today is an absolute perfect example. Yesterday's Los Angeles severe weather was a perfect example. Minneapolis getting hit by a major snowstorm January 2nd and then getting hit again 50 days later is a perfect example. So example after example, somebody just went on Twitter and they said, does the LRC ever predict weather that doesn't end up happening? Hmm. And I said, well, we've made four severe weather risks so far this year. We made 11 severe weather risks. We're four for the first four. And when we miss, I'll let you know.
Does the LRC ever predict weather for Kansas City today?
Yes, we always come through.
Okay.
Sometimes I don't. I don't.
Well, that's Nate said that. Don't
say anything.
All right.
Making noises.
You went, Okay, here we go. I'm not sensitive, am I? 37 degrees. 37 degrees is our current temperature. We have another drizzly day and a high today of around 45 to 48 degrees. Tonight down into the 30s, staying above freezing. I like that. 45 to 47 tomorrow. Another system coming in with a chance of rain tomorrow night. So close to snowing tomorrow night, but it probably won't. And then, you know, when is it going to get back up to 60 degrees? Opening day at the K. All right? 62 degrees on opening day at the K. Forecast we made about a long time ago, by the way. All right, we'll keep you updated on that. It's almost baseball season. It is right now 37 degrees, north winds at 14 miles per hour, a little bit of a wind chill of 28 degrees. So bundle up, cold. It's spring. We've had a lot of rain this winter, not a lot of snow, but a lot of moisture, so it's going to about to green up. All the buds are going to come out here soon. The average blast freeze is April the 9th, so it's coming up soon. And then we can look to warmer days. Have that positive attitude. Do you guys have one?
Very much so.
You keep talking about bud coming out.
The buds are coming out. You guys are amazing. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Gary. We will take a break back after this on WHB.